Dave Shinen is here from the Washington Post. Luke Jones is here. We're at Pizza John's. We have French fries and gravy that I've been eating because they've been talking. We had a whole hour on Batista before you got here. It's probably our third hour in a couple weeks. There's a guy there with the injury, and Luke, I'm going to call you out on this because it's like 18 months ago, Luke's like, well, he's hurt. He'll come back. They all come back. It's Tommy John. He's got a good success rate, whatever, and now we're here. It's 18 months. We're waiting. You're getting a little impatient. Next week's opening day. Everybody's impatient. The team's impatient. Team's saying, well, we only made four appearances. He's on the backfield. He'll be fine. You're nervous. Everybody's nervous. The notion that this surgery is a root canal and we're just going to go out and eat pizza later.
No.
It's not, and it's been made to be that, and I want you to be the old graybeards. I knew Tommy John. Let me tell you about that. You can do that if you want, Dave.
Yeah, well, I don't go back quite that far, but yeah.
I had his baseball card. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, what do you – I mean, lovely Batista man. Is the great example of a guy who was that for this organization, as good as they've ever been, and now we're sitting here saying – is he even a major league pitcher again, right? Same thing we're going to say about Bradish. Is he ever really going to pitch again? And if he does, is he even going to be as good enough to be a big leaguer or have that kind of velocity? And the notion right this minute that Batista's just going to go back ever and be what he was 2 years ago, I always have to question that medically, physically, knowing what my mind knows, knowing what injuries are. But you can always make a case that this guy did it, and this guy came back, and this guy didn't get the surgery, and he was okay. I mean, but it is individual. And right now, we're in it with Batista. We're in it, especially with Kittredge being hurt. We're just in it.
I'll defer to Dave to hear his thoughts on Batista. But I do want to point out, Tommy John surgery does have an extremely high return rate at this point in time.
I mean, this
isn't Tommy John from 35 years ago where it did feel at that point like this guy's career might be over. That said,
and it ain't automatic.
This is why I always tell people that, like, last year at this time, there were plenty of sentiments that Bradish should just have Tommy John surgery now. He's going to end up missing part of next year. Because you want to go and exhaust every other conservative route to potentially avoid surgery because it's not 100%. I'm not impatient with Batista. It's much more
but the season start. We
17
need
months
right?
removed. I mean, this is the end of that general range of a timeline for a return. So if there's some kind of an issue, and maybe there isn't. Like I said, maybe they're just being deliberately evasive and coy because teams like to do that in 2025 for a competitive edge. But it does feel a little, okay, I didn't expect him to be ramping it up, throwing 102 and pitching back-to-back days and an inning and two-thirds on opening day by any stretch. But if he's not going to be on the opening day roster, that's when, I do start to ask, like, is everything okay?
Yeah, it is very much individualized, and you can't just guarantee that someone's going to come back 100%. I agree with you that it's almost to that point now. It's become so sophisticated. But in having spoken to guys who have been through this, there is a mental disconnect and a mental hurdle you still have to get past to be able to let it go at 100%. Even if the doctor is telling you you're 100%, even if by all other physical metrics you are 100%, there is a mental component that is still preventing you from getting back to your old self because there's still a kernel of doubt in your mind about what's going on in your arm. So I have no idea that that's going on with Bautista. It wouldn't surprise me, though, if that was part of what's going on, is that there is still that mental hurdle to get past and he hasn't gotten there yet. I don't know.
Yeah, what's interesting about it, and again, this is all secondhand, but every time I've heard him do sessions with the media, he sounds very positive. He sounds very matter-of-fact, like, I'll be ready for opening day. I know, you know, it's been about a week as we're talking in real time now since his last Grapefruit League outing, but he was touching 98.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not – I mean, the velo is not where it was, and maybe –
he's not hurt.
A lot of guys aren't 98
right, right.
now.
And they kind of build back. And some of this is also, you know, for as great as the success rate for Tommy John is the first time around, we're starting to see more and more guys have to get it multiple times.
Yes.
So maybe there is something to be said, and maybe this is the first step, going back to what you said in terms of guys needing to be more durable and understanding there's a long-term play here. Maybe the rehab needs to change. Maybe the expectations from the rehab, okay, you're ready to pitch again. The idea isn't necessarily that you're going to be humping it at 102 all the time like you were pre-injury. So there's and if that's the case and that's all it is, then fine. And he should be ready for opening day or soon thereafter, and he should be fine, even if you're not going to get the guy he was 2 years ago, which, injury or not, he may never have done that again. I mean, that was historic
that
what
correct.
He did. So
that's right.
So, but yeah, the prevalence of seeing more and more guys, I mean, Spencer Strider wasn't, I don't think he had Tommy John last year, but he had his UCL repaired. So it was, you know, along the same lines. You know, guys like that, it's like, okay, what's it going to look like now when you're being cut on multiple times? So maybe there is something to that in a big picture sense that maybe the Orioles are thinking about, or other teams are, or maybe they should be. I have no idea if that's at work, but he himself has been very positive about it, whereas it seems like, you know, when you hear Brandon Hyde talk, it's been, or Drew French, their pitching coach, it's been a little more, well, we'll see. We're still ironing this out. And again, who knows? Maybe he pitches twice, you know, in their last three spring games and he's ready to go. But it seems like it's been a little bit too much that, again, I'm not impatient, but I'm starting to get a little nervous. Like, okay, this is starting to not feel exactly the way I thought it would 3 weeks ago when he first made his spring debut.
There could also be a scenario going on where they are bringing him back more slowly than they need to, because again, like we were saying at the beginning of this segment, that everybody's making the playoffs. The Orioles, you know, they're going to be in the thick. You need him in August, September, and especially
October. Yeah,
more than you need him in March and April.
And he's never done that. I mean, 2022 was his rookie year. They were in contention, but they didn't make it. And then he got hurt in late August of 23. Right. Which, go look at his workload. He had thrown almost as many innings as he had the entire previous year. So I think that's very plausible, but still, at the same time, when you consider how important he is and how much, you know, if we have some angst about it as, you know, media, let alone fans who are really going to start to have some angst, maybe the messaging could be a little bit better in that regard then. Just throwing that out there.
We are at Pizza John's in Essex. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We have the Magic 8 Balls. Dave Shinen of Baltimore, but of the Washington Post, and Luke Jones, of course. We've had French fries and gravy, delicious meat sauce pizza with pepperoni per Chef Luke Jones here in a baseball season. Dave, ownership, new ownership, expectations. I think the last time I had you on the show was June of last year. You visited me during Fleet Week down at Cooper's. We did the show down at Cooper's in Fells Point.
Yeah.
At that point, the Orioles were on, you know, on top of the world, on fire. I remember visiting with you about a year and a half ago with Rasig, and we asked you whether the Orioles or the Ravens were going to win the World Series first, and I think you said neither, flippantly, like, it's really hard to do. We're still at that neither for you. But the one thing I didn't see coming, and I said this even to my wife, because my wife was asking me about my press credential this week, and I've had all my negotiations and stuff. And I said to my wife what I said a year ago, like this week. I didn't think Peter was ever going to die. Like, I never, like, and I don't mean that even flip, you laughing, but I mean, like, I never thought, ever, who's going to own the team next? What kind of person is it going to be? Where is he going to be from? What kind of entity is it going to be? How are they going to invest? What kind of people? Like, all of that. It never occurred to me. Now we're a year into it, and Rubenstein had a speech on Thursday at a golf club that Leonard Raskin was at that. He was going to join us next week and talk about it. Just observations, dude. You were here when Angelos took over. That's all we've had other than 5 minutes of Eli Jacobs. Whatever this new thing is, you're a little underwhelmed because they didn't spend a bunch of money from a baseball standpoint. You live in the city, and they're marketing this and that and whatever. I'm fully expecting next week on Wednesday when we're there, the Red Sox are in town, that there'll be 12,000 people there like it always is. I mean, I'm in Essex right now. I don't feel any like, woo, we bought our tickets. We're free. We got a new owner. New ownership is, he's going to have a bobblehead this year and whatever. I think it's boosted some confidence from baseball fans. I don't think they've created any new fans. I don't think they've done anything that they say they're going to do with Katie Griggs. Like, what's the grand plan? And I talk a lot about streaming and media money and the Masson money that was split with Washington. If I were to sit with them privately, publicly, in any way, I'd say, what's the plan here, dude? And Luke says, well, they don't ever give the plan. And I'm like, well, there's usually some smoke screens, some signs of things they're going to do. I don't even know what they're going to do with the stadium. They got a lot of money to do that.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of news to be had here about new owners if we're waiting on some massive change. I don't know. I mean, I'm a little underwhelmed on the massive change part of things. I am pretty – it's pretty clear Peter's not here anymore. They're spending $150 million on players this year.
Right.
So it's better, but is it good enough, or is it going to be good enough?
Yeah, I think they got – Rubenstein got a lot of love for not being Angelos. Like, that was the that's what everybody took to him for. Oh, my God, you're not Angelos, you know. Let's party, man. You're our savior. And he got a lot of mileage out of that, and there was a long honeymoon. I think, though, that, you know, this was the winter where I think people wanted to see him come through. Maybe I'm just speaking for myself. I feel like I'm speaking for a lot of the fan base.
Well, we have been waiting 42 years. I mean, literally,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, it was like this was the winter. You have all the pieces in place. You've built the core. You've done it the hard way. You've put fans through the 110 lost seasons, multiple. And you're at the point now where it's the grand bargain with your fan base, with your clubhouse, and with your GM is that if they do their jobs, and they clearly did, I'm going to do my job as the owner. I'm going to open up. And look, I know the payroll went up, and because they had to pay everybody their arbitration raises and everything else. I just think there could have been some more urgency this offseason, and especially with a new owner to come in and say, look, we're going for it.
I think there are two things that they could have done, talking about Rubenstein and the new ownership group, that really could have meant a lot, that even wouldn't have been going out and signing an outside free agent to a monster deal, an extension to one of their homegrown players. And now, easier said than done when you're talking about a bunch of Scott Boras clients.
I think that would...
That's never going to happen, right, Dave? I mean, Boras, no, never?
It's very, very
rare. The timing
rare.
Of it,
Steven Strasburg did it.
I just think if that's an expectation, that's like, well, you know, going to Mars.
They almost never give
up. But some guys have, though.
Very few, yes.
So, and again, acknowledging that, but I think if you're being honest about what would be very meaningful to the fan base, that, and then the other thing, complicated by, obviously, they came to a resolution with Masson. We know the Nats are playing out one more year, being shown on Masson, and then they're going to be on their own. We're going to see what's going to happen with both teams but the Orioles and the Nats are two of the four remaining teams in Major League Baseball who do not have a direct-to-consumer option for streaming. I think if you had done that, and again, we're talking about Orioles, but Nats, they would have benefited from this as well. But you do that, and you have an extension for one of your homegrown players, it doesn't necessarily have to be Gunnar. Westberg. Colton Cowser is probably someone that you probably could right now do an extension for that would be way cheaper than those guys I mentioned. Or, you know, Rutschman, you know, if you want to talk about him. But I think those, for talking about to cap the first year of the new ownership group, would have been two items that really would have gone a long way. That I'm not saying you're selling out and drawing 3.5 million people like the late 90s. I don't know if we're ever going to see that again here in Baltimore. But I think those would have been two measures, especially that latter one, feeling like it should have been plausible. And
that's,
I get
business.
It's messy because you've got lingering TV distributor deals with DirecTV and all. But, boy, I feel like that really could have gone a long way, because I couldn't tell you how many people, just in my own personal circle, not even interacting with fans, just people in my own life, people at church, who are constantly asking me, like, when are the Orioles going to have an option where I don't have to subscribe to a cable distributor that I have to spend $200 a month, and I don't watch any of those other channels.
Dave, I'll let you respond to that, but I literally sent a text last night with your complaint, right? And this is a longtime Major League Baseball executive who at one point issued Dave and I both press passes back in the day. And I sent him Danielle Allen Tuck, who I don't know, but it was her tweet. 26 of 30 teams now have a direct-to-consumer option. The Orioles are one of the last holdouts. And I sent this to my friend who was a longtime executive. Said, they're last in line for everything. Mm-hmm. And he wrote back to me, we used to be first in everything. When he worked there, right?
Yeah.
So you can see who my person is here. They're last in line for everything was my line. Everybody sees that. And that was part of the Angelos thing, right? They have so many things they have to get right with Rubenstein. The stadium renovations. The city relies. You pay taxes in the city. The city needs the Orioles to thrive. They need to be this Cardinals thing that you speak of, and yeah. not that Pirate thing or that Brewer thing or that Rockies thing or that Rays thing or that A's thing. They need to be, and as my dear friend, our dear friend wrote back, the franchise should be a crown jewel. It hasn't been that since you were a teenager, Luke, right? Mm-hmm. And I want to see that shine. And part of that, for me, was spending 45 minutes of my week fighting with someone who knows I'm a media member about whether I'm a media member or not. And it reminds me of the last 32 years of, like, how are you going to be? What kind of people are you going to be? Is Katie Greig going to come out to Essex and shake hands with people? Or are they going to hide and take their $3 million salary and dictate from above and buy the digital strategy and shake hands from afar? I had a screenshot that one of their business administration people that I'm going to share with my dear Katie Greig's letter next week. But it just had to do with how little the players really touch people and how little the team touches people and really how few what I am right here right now, which is an advocate for the Orioles, how few former players live here and sort of circulate around. I see BJ. But that was the thing that ate off of this, was that in the 90s when I met you and we're doing the show, all those guys lived here. Joe Orsolak, they made lives here when they were done, let alone the Crowleys and the Belangers and the, you know, all of that. Bordick is here, BJ's here. But they don't have ambassadors, and their players are never going to be that again because they don't live here, and they're minute to minute. I mean, all their pitchers they rented for a week. I mean, whose jersey am I buying right now for a pitcher? And they brought Adam Jones back. That's a nice, chef's kiss.
That was a really good move.
He seems like the last guy. He seems like the last guy that you're talking about.
Well, he married a Baltimore girl too, so that he had that going on.
Yeah, but I mean, he seems like the last of the ambassador types who stick around and become part of the face of the franchise.
And I think that's being I don't think that's exclusive to the Orioles.
But that's problematic here.
Yeah. No question.
Really problematic.
Well, it's problematic when you've had I was born in 1983. I was born literally 2 weeks before the Orioles last won the World Series.
It's his fault.
I'm going to be 42 in October and I have a bunch of gray hair, and for most of my lifetime, save for a handful of years,
distinguished gray.
I'm fine with it. But for most of my lifetime, save for a handful of years, they've been pretty miserable. Like, they've stunk. They've been one of the worst franchises in sports over the last 40 years. When we're talking in terms of on-field success or lack thereof.
Their off-the-field reputation is worse.
Sure,
that's what I'm saying. But getting people's money in their business.
Sure.
The heart of baseball fans.
That's why
they stunk for 42 years, and I'm still sitting here talking
about it.
That's
why I think the streaming
thing. I'm still getting on a plane and going to Toronto next week.
As challenging as it might have been for an array of reasons, and understanding that, you know, the Masson dispute was, I mean, this was something that went for the better part of 15 years in terms of courts and litigation and all of that. But, boy, you talk about a gesture that I think would have gone a long way, short of even doing the extension, if you just had that. And look, gesture part of it aside, you're going to have a lot of people who aren't going to be watching your games this year who otherwise would have. That hurts, right? And even if you say, okay, well, charging $20 a month for a direct-to-consumer streaming option isn't the same as what everyone in the region giving you $3 a month on your cable or satellite bill like it was 15 years ago, but there's also a long-term seed being planted there in terms of engagement with fans and young fans who, you know, anyone my age and younger – They don't have cable and satellite. I finally cut the cord this offseason because I finally had internet in my area that kind of made it a little more plausible for me.
But there's things that we have to do to get the game.
Yeah, right.
I don't even want to talk about it. It's a headache.
Friday night Apple TV and like, oh. Yeah. Well, Dave Shinen is here. Dave, I want to bring you in on this because like we talk so much about the field and the pitching and the team and Adley Rutschman and the ownership and all the nonsense, but I'm not sure that they know what they're doing about any of the revenue model here, because he just gave me the $20 a month, because that's what your mom can afford. Your mom can afford $20 a month, 6 months a year, $120. Mom is in for that. Where does mom break it? $299, $399, $449. At what point does she look at it and say, no to all of it. No to all of it. And then it's, well, we'll charge you $5 for a game on Friday. I ain't paying $5 for a game. I mean, even though it seems nominal, I'm not that guy. I don't buy movies one at a time at home. I'm not one of those click on the paper. You know, I didn't do any of that. But the business itself, and I've talked to a lot of baseball business people on the back end of Masson. $5 beers in the Birdland exclusive club, that was a great move,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That ain't buying Gunnar Henderson. Mom's $20 a month now at $120 a year, and there's 130, 180, 210,000 people willing to do that. The Orioles don't have 4.5 million fans in the world.
Yeah.
The way the Yankees have 12 million fans
fairness,
in the world.
$20 to $30 a month is the price point you're seeing around baseball.
Okay,
though.
Good. But what does that equal? How does that ring the bell
Where this is a larger baseball issue. I mean, other than the Yankees,
right.
the Dodgers, the Nets.
I don't know where their revenue's coming from.
I think Major League Baseball doesn't know where.
I think every sport other than the NFL and the NBA who did – quite well on their most recent TV rights deal. They're all figuring it out at this point because everything but the NFL is niche.
Hey,
so, I mean,
Major League Baseball took the RSN business and made that business bankrupt because it wasn't good enough. It wasn't strong enough. They couldn't sell it for enough. So when these ESPN goes out and buys the rights or rescinds the rights for Major League Baseball, as they did 2 weeks ago, I know what that deal is because I talked rights fees in the 90s when I had a radio station and BAL was paying $3 million a year. So back in the 90s when you were on the beat, Jeff Beauchamp over there and Ed Kiernan would go to Peter and at that time Joe Foss and say, here's $3 million just to have your games on the radio. We get all 162 games, middle of the night, Seattle. Team could totally stink. Now I got to go out to Black & Decker, to DAP, to Budweiser. I got to get $600,000 from them. I got to call Wise Markets and get $250,000 from them just to try. And then I got to pay John Miller and then, they fire him because he wanted $400,000 and they didn't want to give it to him. So the cost of all of that just in micro or macro, I should say, micro actually, in Baltimore 30 years ago to say that's what their revenue model was. Even when they had the skyboxes sold and all, it was BAL writing a huge check and then having to go bust their ass to try to make $3.1 million and make money off of it. The money was guaranteed for the baseball side. Now, baseball with this RSN model, for the first time ever, they got to hit their weight. They're going to have to go out and sell it themselves. I'm not convinced that that's going to be real good for them. And their streaming numbers, when they actually see how many people are really watching the game, they're going to want to hide. They are. Just like when they sold Southwest Airlines those ads and said, 2.4 million people are coming into the stadium when 900,000 are showing up, right? So those numbers and those metrics for businesses to support this for putting a sign up or an ad up, I don't know where that business is for them. I worry for them. And to your point of giving money away or not, and I ain't crying for Rubenstein, but how this thing is ever going to be anything at nut on nut. In other words, if the Orioles generate $190 million, they spend $190 million, they're never going to be able to compete like that here because Washington happens. One thing Angelos was right about when he told me, he said, if both cities have teams, it's really going to diminish Baltimore. And that's the argument every East Baltimore Oriole fan to make. Yeah, Peter got screwed on the money. Peter took all the money. He's dead. John's counting it. And now they are a small market team, finally.
Yeah.
They really are.
And it's amazing to think about. I mean, we were talking about the late 90s and those payrolls were top five in the game. They ran top five payrolls in all of baseball.
Because they were top five revenue.
Right. They were averaging $3 million plus every single game.
Seven states, $3 from everybody.
Every year.
Right?
Every year. Yeah. $3 million a time. Yeah.
Sold out skyboxes because DC, they had all DC's money.
Right.
And then by 01, the Ravens had come in, stolen the skyboxes, won a championship. Peter pissed everybody off. And the skyboxes emptied out.
And then the Nats.
3 years later,
The Nats, right. So the question is, can the Orioles ever get back to that?
No.
And I think the answer is no. I'm not sure that is ever coming back.
Well, then how are they going to keep Gunnar? I mean, this is an existential issue for me with the Orioles to say, we're giving them $600 million to fix the stadium up. They've got really good players. We'll all agree, as good a player as that they've ever had. And if they don't cash this in and move that needle, and I don't even know what that's worth, dude. You and I were in Kansas City 10 years ago, and we were there when it was all blue, and they won for a minute, and they spent a little bit of money and pocketed a little bit, and they fixed the stadium up, and now they're just a dreg Midwest team in the middle. I mean, they won last year, but they're not making money. They can't afford they're in the same situation the Orioles are in, that if they got good, Gunnar Henderson would go play for the Dodgers or whatever. And you mentioned these young guys signing here and wanting to be here. Maybe Gunnar Henderson doesn't want to commit to here right now. some of these guys. Maybe like legitimately saying, I don't know where we are, where this is, and that I want to be here in 2032. Maybe some of these guys don't, not just money and Boros, just they're not committed. I'm not committed to the Orioles. I don't know what they are. I guess that's my point. I don't know what David Rubenstein is going to be or what this is going to become. Because so far, even you love them and you're a little tepid on like, they could have done more.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know that young players anymore are geared that way to think about, I'm going to stay with this franchise the rest of my career. I don't think
Bobby Witt
in their
did.
DNA.
It's funny because you mentioned the Royals. Bobby Witt actually
Bobby
did.
Bobby Witt may be the – yeah. But that's so rare
right.
anymore.
His dad's not played for the Rangers. They stay there.
Yeah. It's not just Boris clients either. Sure. It's everybody. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
but the money's only going like this forever. And I don't
– yeah.
I don't know how it keeps going like that because they don't have ideas that are like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's where I am.
I mean, the Juan Soto contract was just mind-boggling.
Well, if you have a sugar daddy. I mean, that's what I'm trying to figure out with Rubenstein. San Diego had a sugar daddy for a minute. Detroit had a sugar daddy.
Right.
And it's different. Look, we could sit here all day. He loves the NBA. I love the NHL. You cover the NFL. We all cover the NFL. It's all baseline, right? It's all salary cap. You spend more on coaches, more on sports medicine, whatever you want to do. Baseball is the one thing where it's just this absolutely gross divide of imbalance in regard to the long arc of how many years you can spend against the Yankees and Dodgers and say, well, the Yankees haven't won anything. Yeah, but they win every year. You're uphill against all of them. Yeah. And college sports, as we're sitting here watching basketball, I mean, that the haves and have-nots of college basketball and college football. But baseball's just still going to suffer from the original sin, which is they could never figure out the Hawks and the Doves back in 1993 to get this thing set so that we're not having these open arguments about how much revenue can they take from Luke's mother in order to be able to keep players. Because, like, it really is going to take revenue. You laugh about Luke's mother. It's going to take this this little revenue that they think is going to feed into this because there's no big revenue in Baltimore. I know this. There nobody's coming other than Legg Mason to put a patch on them. There's just not money coming of that kind that's going to support a $300 million payroll, and there's not a sugar daddy media company to come in to do it right now. So it is going to take a sugar daddy owner. He's going to have to spend more than they're making, and I don't know if he's willing to do that. I haven't sat with him to find out.
No, we have no evidence that he's willing to do that. But, you know, this is the grand bargain in baseball ownership, is that you might not make the revenues that you hope or feel like you need to be able to spend to the point you need, but the franchise values keep going up. And now I understand that may stop at some point, but it hasn't yet. Franchise values, did you see what the Celtics sold for just the other day? I mean, and I know that's a different sport, but it's true of all sports. Sports franchises continue to go up in value. So there's a sense that you can spend against that future value of your franchise and justify overspending your revenue. Like, Rubenstein can spend what he wants to spend. Right? Just like Steve Cohen with the Mets can.
I mean, look how much money the Dodgers are deferring at this point in time, and they actually
so,
are.
So you have
Rubenstein's
that.
Rubenstein's already spent $1.8 billion on this thing.
Yeah.
He's already out over his – I mean, he bought it for more than the revenue is – he paid more than it's generating, that's for sure. Right? But Angelos bought the team for $29 million in cash, $174 million, if you believe that math, that's wrong, and wound up selling it for $1.8 billion. I did the math. They made $1 million a day. Every day for 32 years.
Wow.
It was $1 million a day every day for 32 years is what they made. And that's in addition to all the money they pocketed. Because they pocketed well in excess of $1 billion. They were pocketing $50 to $100 million a year in 06, 07, 08, 09. They had 90% of Masson at that time. And they controlled all of it. And they were screwing the Nationals on it and pocketing their own money. So they were just pocketing money for a long time. And then in the end, as I wrote, John hit a walk-off grand slam, and he's in the dugout counting the money right now at $2 billion, because it, you know, they made a half a billion, like, just in toward the end. By the way, the Ravens are now worth $8 billion.
Yeah.
I looked at my guy who told me that the other day. I said, you just said five last year. He's like, well, you know. I mean, that's where that thing's going because that thing's printing money.
Yeah.
Baseball's not printing money.
No.
And he overpaid for this. He's got a huge debt service to this, right, at $1.8 billion. Rubenstein. That to himself I'm talking about as to what this thing's going to spin out or the $600 million that's coming in where this guy 3 years from now when he's 78 just says, I'm done, flip it for $3.2 billion, you know? And he's going to make money on
this. Right,
right. Now, whether he's going to win or not, it's going to be up to him. He's going to have to invest to win, right? It's not going to be the fans.
Clearly,
you don't go to
yeah.
the fans and say, give us more money and we'll spend it. We're not on that play. He's going to have to be a sugar daddy of some kind.
That's
short,
what I'm saying,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
You can do that, and you can justify it by the growth in the sale price that is inherent to sports franchise ownership. Maybe it does end at some point, but it is not ending right now. So he has in his back pocket that hypothetical $3 billion sale price 3 years from now that can justify spending if he
$100 million
wants to
more than you need to for 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that was my thought on all of it. Yeah. You spend $2 billion on the team, take a half a billion right off the bat and say, I'm going $100 million too big every year the first 5 years.
I mean, that's what Steve Cohen did on a larger scale.
Well, Rubenstein certainly didn't do that.
No.
No. Dave Schein, it's here. We're eating potato chips and french fries and pretzels and pizza. And we got – what do we have? What are you taking home? You going to get a chicken parm? What are you doing?
Insane
thing.
Home.
He's going to get the pizza that he got here. We got the pepperoni.
Cheese steaks are really good here, though, too.
They're really good.
They're good.
What are you getting, Dave?
That's my mom's favorite.
I have
do you
no
like
idea.
Cheesesteaks?
Yeah, of course. Who doesn't?
You get your cheesesteak here. We're at Pizza John's. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. My buddy Stan is showing up. Ken's here. Everybody's here. Half a Dundalk I brought over to Essex. I can't believe the Dundalk guys come over here. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery, the Magic 8-Ball, and the Scratch-Offs. My thanks to Pizza John's for their enduring support. They're at 113 Back River Neck Road here in beautiful Essex, as my mom would say. 410-687-7733. My wife's always like, you call down to Pizza John's and order some pizza, and I just know the number. She's like, how do you know the number? I'm like, I've been calling it since 1978 or whatever. So 410-687-7733, it's an easy number. Come on down, order online. And, it, you know, if Dave has relatives that live other places, and Stanley's out in Chicago where they have pretty good pizza. But Stan, it says right here, if you're thinking about Essex when you're out there in Chicago freezing your ass off, pizzajohns.com. Bake at-home pizzas nationwide. They serve them everywhere. My thanks to Dave. Appreciate you. Maybe we'll go to a ball
pleasure.
Game or something
that
one day.
That would be awesome.
How's your band? You got an album coming out? What are you doing?
No, man. I'm kind of sidelined there for the time being. I got to put kids through college. I can't be
the Washington Post has become the Yoko Ono of your band? Is that what you're telling me?
Wow.
Breaking the band up?
Well, that's really funny.
Yeah, that's a mind bender there. Yeah. Yeah. The Yoko Ono of my band, yeah.
But you're on baseball or you're on Olympics? What are you doing?
No. Olympics and, like, features and projects, yeah.
I saw you write about baseball 3 weeks ago. I'm like, he's back! And I was all wrong.
One story. It was one. It was about analytics.
Right. Well, you spoil me when you do baseball.
Yeah.
Well, you know a lot about baseball.
I love baseball, yeah.
You know baseball better than you know anything, right?
I came to dislike it towards the end of 2020, 2021. Until they fixed the product, yeah, I was turned off. I was ready to get out of it.
I'll be turned off in Toronto next week when a half of Canada is booing my baseball team. Luke will be in the press box in Toronto eating the really good hot dogs. I'll be down in the front with Mrs. Blue Jay doing okay. Blue Jays, let's play ball. See, he's been to Toronto. He doesn't know about the song. I am Nestor. We're signing off from Pizza John's. I knew I'd make him sing. He's a real singer. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore. I'm dropping the pizza and the french fries. Back for more on WNST. Stay with us.